Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I forgot about our young lady from across the pond. My name is Don Allen. I'm in Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you this rainy morning?
I can't complain, Don. And again, we thank our young lady from Birmingham, England. Does that remember correctly? Birmingham, England. That was a beautiful promotional piece that she's put together for the Don and Ron program out of the United States, if you will. We want to continue to thank her and the ad agency that brought her to us. Don, a lot going on, if you will, a lot of silence, if you will, across the board. I understand that, unfortunately, I don't understand, I know for a fact, that violence is out of control. We were going to be taking a look early this morning at Mike Freeman, the county attorney. Now, we broke this story, actually, Don, last Saturday. People were saying that it wasn't, we didn't know, you know, it wasn't confirmed. We didn't know what we were talking about, et cetera. And I'm looking last night at WCCO Channel 4, who initially was going to do something on this, but then they got nervous and started to really kind of beating for the punch. But all of them staying away from the comments that Mike Freeman made to two police officers, not in the meeting, but outside the meeting, as exclusively reported by the Don and Ron program from Twin Cities, Minnesota, St. Paul. And all day last night, I mean, particularly CCO and them talking in terms of our prayers are with the county attorney and that he has an alcoholic problem. But, you know, let's talk about it when we move into it, because Mike's had an alcoholic problem for a long time.
Oops.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, shit, right? Come on. But also we've got the violence. What is this violence situation? Breaking news, really? Major confrontations on the light rail last night? Is this what we're hearing, Don? Give us an update.
Yes, we are awaiting a call from a young man by the name of Brian James Stanley, who reported that some young Somali men are attacking people at the light rail station with hammers in Minneapolis. And this was 8 hours ago. And so that's what he posted. And so I'm waiting for him to call and give us an update. He's one of our out-in-the-field reporters, and he has something hot here, and hopefully he can call us momentarily. We are waiting for him to give us a call, Mr. Edwards, and when he shows up, we'll get him on in. But to let people know, there was a report that in Minneapolis, some young Somali men were attacking people with a hammer at a light rail station, and we'll get him to confirm that and explain the details.
Right. This makes sense with regards to the anger in the Somali community in regards to the Mohammed Noor trial, though many Somali leaders, and particularly Omar and them, never spoke out. But the rank and file, the masses, the base of the Somali community here in the Twin Cities have been very angry. They recognize what happened at trial, how the Somali community was maligned. By the way, the major papers in Australia, this is an exclusive and breaking piece here on the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities. A couple of the major papers in Australia that are kind of considered to be left of center, whatever that really supposed to mean, particularly in Melbourne and Perth, Australia, for those that, you know geography. I have indicated that the Justine's daddy, who is an American born, migrated to Australia to get away from the black problem in America. Ooh, look out, we aren't supposed to talk about that. Has given quietly about $200,000 to white nationalists in Australia. Yes, sir.
Oh, wow.
$200,000 of that big $18 million. Actually, $20 million and $2 million, by the way. And I understand that R.T. Ryback and the Minneapolis Foundation have already quietly been making sure that some money has been moved into some bank accounts to take care of of the folks that, quote unquote, made sure that Muhammad Nord didn't receive a fair trial, if you will. And by the way, Muhammad Nord is still in the maximum security prison at Oak Park Heights, just outside of Stillwater, Minnesota, not to be confused with the much older Stillwater Penitentiary. And he is in, quote-unquote, lockdown, if you will, but he is in the midst of white nationalists. I find it interesting that money has been quietly given to white nationalists in Australia, thanking them for, quote-unquote, their support, whatever that's supposed to mean. Now, I think that our young Somalis are beginning to get a better understanding that they are, quote-unquote, America's new poster child as it pertains to our poster children, as it pertains to segregation, racism, and et cetera. That's my take, Don. And they're angry. They're angry. Their leaders never spoke up, never said anything, have expressed no concern about how the trial went. But again, Australian news media reporting that the Justine's daddy, who is an American-born white man, by the way, made sure that a donation of about $200,000 was given to white nationalists. And born and white nationalists in Australia are real tough on people of color, and particularly the indigenous people who no one ever talks about, and that is the Aborigines, right? Real tough on them, okay? So yeah, just, you know, some of the stuff going, and then we got other things happening here. We've got the abortion issue. Did you see what they did in Missouri and Alabama yesterday?
Alabama, 99 Missouri.
Years if you're involved in an abortion. I said, well, you know, you don't get that much time to people that actually outright kill people. But, hey, you know, that's what it is. But what's your take on this Mike Freeman situation, Tom? Why do they continue to spook feed us on that?
Well, I think, you know, Mike Freeman, what comes to mind first is I think of if they're saying that he had this kind of challenge, you know, dating back many years and got more serious over the last few years, how did that affect his judgment? Especially when he's deciding process and policies for black men and women. You know, if you're in a haze, there's not a whole lot you can do that's legit, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let me say this, Don, going back a little bit before your time when you were, well, you were just probably a little toddler in daycare. Mike Freeman has always had a anger towards black people, if you will. And it goes back to when he was trying to run for governor before he became county attorney in 1990. But as a younger white man, he thought that black pimps had kidnapped his daughter taken her to New York City and et cetera. And there was a lot of hostility by his campaign and particularly by his public relations and campaign manager, a racist by the name of D.J. Leary, okay? You know, all the folks out there can call it up. They like to grab the little mouse and call information up. And Mike took a real dislike to the African-American community. He called us a lot of different names, made a lot of references. In fact, the police did a number of sweeps. I had never seen anything like that until a couple of years later after the murder of police officer Jerry Hoff in South Minneapolis. Police rousted Negroes off of Hennepin Avenue and et cetera. A lot of Negroes were hanging out in a place called Moby Dick's, if you will, a popular drinking spot there and et cetera. But Mike never had any affinity, if you will, or respect for the Negro. And so, you know, I've watched him, as I was quoted in last Saturday's edition of the paper, is that he has really seen us as, you know, something less than human, even though he'll hire an African-American. He'll hire an African-American woman, but he doesn't like African-American males to be around him. You understand what I'm saying to you, Donald?
Oh, I understand.
And, oh, yeah. And so you know, I'm like you, though. I mean, Mike has been, you know, bending that elbow and turning up that alcohol for a long time. But I think he made a mistake with regards to the two officers. Number one, the statements he made to them, the fact that our media, with the exception of the Don and Ron program out of Minnesota, have declined to indicate who he was referencing when he talked in terms of, you know, I'm Justine, Diamond, thanks for not shooting me, that kind of thing. But one of the problems that they run into, and we're going to say that on this program this morning, is that the two officers, under the leadership of the head of their federation, Bob Crow, who's going to protect his rank and file, put their statements in writing. And early on, Chief Arredondo made the mistake that everybody else basically made, except for those of us that were knowledgeable, is that they were saying that, in fact, they were saying that last Saturday on this very program, Donald, that we were saying that the statement was made inside at the meeting of the so-called GVI group and et cetera. We never said that, and any reflection and on this program, we're able to go back on demand. We never said it. What we said was clear and concise. I use that again, clear and concise, that he made that statement outside of the Urban League to two white officers. Now, last night, Bill Hudson of WCCO slipped up and confirmed that, okay? I know that LaBoris Janey, who wrote a nice piece Sunday, was told that he could not use the reference to Justine by Mike, if you will, who was already intoxicated. In fact, really, Mike should have been arrested for DWI. But the officers, understand being concerned about their future and their jobs, declined to do it. But as we exclusively reported here on the Ron and Don program, is that they reported to their superiors, as they are trained and instructed to do. And it's one of the reasons that Lieutenant Bob Crow, a lot of people don't like Bob, that's, you know, that's their call, but that Lieutenant Crow, who is president of the Minneapolis Police Department's Union Federation, called for Mike to resign. See, we just said in the article last Saturday that he really need to take a leave of absence and a separate. So I was kind of surprised that the white media here in the Twin Cities continued to try to play that card, making him seem like the fallen warrior. I mean, Mike knows what he said. And then, you know, he said some other things in that meeting, but then some of your black folks that were in the meeting made a mistake and tried to make it appear that he used the N-word and et cetera. He probably used it, but he didn't use it in that piece. You know what I'm saying, Don? And so we want to make sure that the air is absolutely cleansed, if you will, with regards to this. But I you know, we called it last week, and you know, people wanted to pretend that we didn't know what we were talking about. But that's, you know, just the kind of the narrative, if you will. He knows he went over the line, and that certainly President Bob Crow of the Police Federation stepped up to the plate on behalf of his officers. You know.
Yes. Our call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that call-in number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show live and streaming on Facebook, Dr. Edwards, this morning.
Yeah, that's good, and we got a couple people in the queue. So what else you got? What you got, Don? Because, you know, there's only so much we can say about Mike Freeman. I mean, it is what it is, and what happened is what happened. What else I would do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was kind of chuckling this morning when I read this headline from the Star Tribune, and it's regarding Ramadan, you know, a Muslim practice this time of year. It says Minnesota Muslims shift toward eco-friendly practices during Ramadan. And I'm like,
what is
okay.
What does that mean?
Eco-friendly practice. The Muslims shift toward eco-friendly practices during Ramadan. And I'm looking at the article, Mr. Edwards, and I'm reading this. It's just, they're talking about how they're cooking, and they had a chance to drop a piece in here about the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Environmental Protection Agency about the trash sent to landfills in 2015. So, to me, this was kind of like a slap in the Muslim community, a space for celebrating Ramadan, but also it didn't make any sense, you know.
Ramadan have to do with environmental issues and vice versa? I mean, Ramadan's been going on for 1,000 years. You know what I'm saying, Don? You know what I mean?
What does Ramadan have to do with landfills and trash? You know, that's what I'm trying to figure out. And so they missed the historical aspect on that altogether. And so, like you said, 1,000
landfills and trash. That's pretty insulting, if you will. Did a Muslim report it? I think they only got one. For the Star Tribune, write that? I mean, who wrote that? I mean,
is Danish Raza. So she could be. I mean, I'm not looking up her picture.
I see what they did. They played the race car. They went and got a Muslim female and had her go out and research the environmental situation.
Yeah.
But I heard anything with regards to that, you know, other than people talking terms that the Somalis use too much grease when they cook and et cetera.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't know how to get rid of it.
I would just like to tell the Star Tribune that this is not news, period. Okay? Ms. Edwards, we have a caller.
All right, let's get the caller. Let's get the caller.
Yeah. Caller, what's your name? Any question? You're live on the Ron and Don Show.
Gentlemen.
Caller, go ahead. Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good. This is Mr. Riam. I'm calling from Mobile Studio C in the Twin Cities. And I have just left the location of a restaurant that has been under a tremendous demise called Lola's. And I wanted to view the carnage of the restaurant. I wanted to give the listeners a little bit of an update, some of the update that they may not get from our great news media here. And what I surmise is, you know, the story is that the restaurant was hit by lightning. And, you know, my take on that, as I look at it, it's totally destroyed. It's done. It's almost like there was a bomb thrown at it. But it's my take is that... you know, for you to be hit by you're going to win the lottery twice before you're going to hit by lightning. So I think the fire was suspicious. I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but I think the fire was suspicious. I wonder what you gentlemen think about that.
Well, go ahead, Don. Why don't you respond there first? I mean. Yeah, because we kind of Don received kind of a call from somebody who said that that shouldn't be talked about. Isn't that correct,
oh.
Don? That we got a threat that we shouldn't talk about that about the cafe. I have my own observations, but I'll let my colleague Mr. Allen go first. Go ahead, Don.
I was told any speculation or conspiracy theory about the burning of the restaurant, because you know I want to go there right away, will be viewed as tort interference with, you know, the ongoing processes and policies. And I just put that politely because there was a lot of curse words used. But but anyway, you know, I haven't seen it yet, but I do plan on driving over there. I do plan on driving over there, taking some pictures, posting it on Facebook, and doing my own investigative observation of the building, because you know, I have two big trees in my yard that were struck by lightning, so I know what the footprint looks like. I also have done some military stuff and watched stuff blow up, so I know what that looks like. I know what a gas burn is, and I can tell it from the outside by looking in. So with that said, I'm going to leave that alone. But, yeah, that's my observation. Go ahead, Dr. Edwards.
Thank you. You know, first of all, I received a number of inquiries. I will not go into who the individuals were. Some were supporters and associates of Dr. King, if you will. My position was on yesterday and the prior day was that, you know, we need to wait for the fire marshal give a finding. Yeah, that's what fire marshals are there, both the Minneapolis Fire Department, who has one of the finest fire marshal offices in the state, if you will, and then the state fire marshal. That's why they are there by statute and et cetera. I've heard the same thing about the condition or what's left of the cafe. I do know that there were residents in that surrounding community that were not happy with the transfer of operations, not ownership, because the park board who gave Dr. King a nice sweetheart arrangement and moving him in there after what is it, 10 fish left the facility for whatever reason. And so the hardest hit entity per se, because I assume that Dr. King has insurance on the equipment inside, if you will, but the building and the land that the building's on belongs to the Minneapolis Park Board. Now, I heard a joke being told yesterday, and they said that what really happened was is that John C. Calhoun got his revenge for trying to take his name off of, quote-unquote, Calhoun a lake, if you will. Now, you know, I mean, I wasn't necessarily...
I would like to address
I got you in a minute. I'll be through it in a minute. And so, I thought that it was, you know, the joke was just similar to what we're being told that Mike Freeman made about Justine Damon, if you will. So I don't know. I'm waiting for the fire marshal. When the fire marshal makes a report on the damage, because someone made a crack to me also, because of the military background of Dr. King, they thought it had been hit with a 155 millimeter howitzer. And I know, Don, you and I understand as it pertains to the military what that means. 155, you know, howitzer would blow it absolutely apart. So I don't know, but I'm waiting for the fire marshal. So that's where I'm at. Back to you, Don.
Yeah, that howitzer goes boom in the night and boom in the day. But anyway, a caller, do you have anything else? You have another caller hold?
Yes, I do. I just would like to make one more comment on that. You know, as Mr. Edwards says, we're waiting for the investigation. But I think the investigation is going to be an open and shut type of an investigation because they are going to raise the building, the information that I have, that the building will be demolished by Monday. There will be no more building. There will be no more nothing to investigate. The building will be demolished.
Yeah, well, that's the park board's call. That's because that's the park board's property. And Dr. King has friends there on the park board, and you know they looked after him real good when they gave him the package. It was about this time last year, if I'm not mistaken, that the announcement was made and press conferences and et cetera were held that Dr. King was taking over the operation there and be opening some kind of facility there, if you will. But it's the park board's call because again it's their property and it was their building. So all right. Thank you.
All right, I'll just keep listening.
Thank you, caller. You're live on the air, the Ron and Don Show. You're calling, and what's your question?
Yes,
go ahead,
am I on the air?
Yes.
Yes, you're on air. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead. What do you got?
You know, I'm getting sick and tired of hearing people calling me from out of the country and out of the state asking me what kind of leadership do you have in the state of Minnesota? Where is the black leadership? Where is all of the problem solvers, the big mix fixers, you know, and it seems like every time there's money to be had, they can take care of a problem. Now you got a real big problem, and even on the Muslims Ramadan and that fluff and puff article about eco-friendly is a joke, okay? That's a joke. Now, back to the real Mohammed Noor issue. Now, why is Mohammed Noor today on Channel 4 stated clearly that they're going to put his case on exhibit where white people can come in and listen to it on headphones? Now, we got Jamar Clark. We got incidents after incidents where white cops have done much, much worser carnage and damage. Their cases haven't been put on exhibit. Now, what is he, some kind of specimen now? And since when do you become a police officer and go through the shit that he went through and go to the penitentiary before you get sentenced and then your case gets put on exhibit like you some kind of animal and some kind of specimen? I guess, now we get to see the human side of him.
I don't know how to respond, sir. I mean, your points are well made. In fact, it's interesting because most people here, other than the Don and Ron program, don't even talk about the fact that Mohammed Noor is in 24-hour shutdown at the maximum security penitentiary here in Minnesota, Oak Park Heights, a state-of-the-art supermax, if you will, taken there by the orders of the white judge, who clearly showed animus and hostility to him during the trial, if you will. I'm a little disappointed in his lawyers, even though they did announce a couple of days ago that they would be making the traditional verdict overturn. But, you know, no white judge is going to overturn a jury verdict, if you will, particularly when everybody is in lockstep. But, you know, your points are well made, sir. I don't know. It's a question you have to ask of the black leadership, NAACP and others, if you will. They're the leadership. They're out here. They're being well-funded. The legislature is wrapping up some packages for them, I guess. Though they got to get ready to have a special session because the Democratic governor is not happy. The negotiations aren't going well. I think we all know that. But your point is made, sir. I don't know what to tell you, where the leadership is at. Mr. Allen and I, just before we got the first call, we were talking in terms that in the last 10 days, 7 African-American women have been shot and wounded in the Twin Cities, including one night before last along Broadway. That's a main thoroughfare street going through the black community for our international and domestic audience. Seven African-American women have been shot by gunmen, and no one has allegedly been apprehended, if you will. We were told in one of the shootings that allegedly a suspect was tracked down. But, you know, we never saw any names. We never had any facts conveyed to us as a community. I don't know. Your question is one that needs to be asked of, quote-unquote, leadership. Now, here's what you got to understand, sir. I don't know where you're calling from, is that they just had a big shindig at a big white hotel out in the suburbs, the Negro College Fund. They were dancing and drinking and merrymaking and et cetera. That seems to be what we're really all about. You go downtown to Sevens and some of the clubs downtown, and folks is, you know, drinking and partying and et cetera. I'm hearing a feedback, sir, that what a lot of leaders are saying is that really don't want to be bothered by anything unless it's something that gets them some money. Okay.
That's
and so that's the way I have to put it to you, sir. Mr. Allen has his own observations. I have mine.
I have to concur with what you said because it's more of a social boutique engagement where they do the rallies. They do not the rallies, but the galas or gallows or whatever they call it, the fundraisers, and there's not that many folks that sit down and actually do the work that they need to do in the community, and it's social stratification because they want to know, they rather talk about who, what board of directors they're on, what agency they work with, rather than talk about or doing the work. And we've seen the effects of that, caller and Mr. Edwards, I mean, since 2008. You know, the United Way in 2 years took away $1 million from the Minneapolis Urban League's health section out there, outreach section, and we've been losing. And this year, you know, they got sideswiped at the state legislature again. So we're not winning the battle. We're losing the battle, and we're losing it bad. And I don't even have to go into education because both of you gentlemen are well-versed in what's going on there. And it's ugly for us. And you're right, caller, our leadership that we should depend on and be able to go to in time of crisis has went dark. Mr. Edwards.
Maybe they can do this, caller. I don't know how familiar you are. Again, I don't know if you're calling here from Minnesota or you're outside. We're great at giving awards. We designate people who, half of them don't get the history right anyways. They really don't know clearly and concisely what they're talking about. But we're great on giving awards and talking in terms of allegedly the past and the presence of the folks. We're great about doing that. We're great about,
Then
when you ask questions about the history of the African-American community, how we went downhill and et cetera, folks maintain that that's not something we should talk about. So we have a peculiar approach to how we deal with the problem. But I repeat again, purposely, we've had 7 African-American women in the last 10 days that have been shot and wounded on the streets of Minneapolis. Nobody said anything. Everybody's quiet. So appreciate it. Appreciate your call and your inquiry.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, we have another caller.
Okay, let's get him.
Caller, is this Brian? Is this Brian here?
Yeah, this is Brian Shanley. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Oh, Brian, welcome.
Like
go ahead. Don, why don't you talk with Brian, because he's the one that broke this information on what's happening. Go ahead.
This is Brian, a field reporter. He had some interesting news last night. Brian, why don't you tell us what happened at the light rail station? I saw the post last night, and I wanted to try to get with you as soon as possible. And just go ahead. Bring us up to date.
Well, it's early, and I wasn't there, but the what I heard on the police scanner in Minneapolis is that there were a group of gentlemen that eyewitnesses described as being of Somali descent that were attacking people with hammers at the light rail station. And I don't know who was armed, if anyone.
Okay, do you know which light rail station or location?
I don't.
Okay.
I have little information, and it's a developing story, and I don't have as many details as I would like at this stage. It is my prayer that nobody's dead and nobody's hurt, and that a gentleman feel so free to be wide openly doing this is an effect, and the cause probably only God knows, but as a city, we have to be prepared that this can happen at any moment and be prepared to respond and put it down.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I agree. Well, hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. If you get any details between now and 10:30, please call us back or just, you know, text me and let me know so that we can post it immediately. I appreciate you calling.
Yeah,
right.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Brian. All right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Because we appreciate Brian providing information to the public, because so much is being suppressed. Let me give you a couple of quick examples. Night before last, we had another Somali youth shot and killed, execution style, shot through the head. The media basically downplayed it. Now, the night before that, we had, and that was on the south side, by the way, somewhere around 32nd and Blaisdell, somewhere in there, where Bassam Sabreem's operations are, if you will. The night before that, we had an African-American shot and killed on Laurie in North Minneapolis, Laurie and Logan, if you will, execution style, shot through the head, if you will. So we need people like Brian and others, bloggers and et cetera, to bring the information, because I can tell you it's being suppressed. Now, let me also say this. When you asked him the question about location, for those that have the scanners and et cetera, you know that police are required to talk in code, okay? And so a lot of things that they're saying, they're giving numerical numbers and such things, is that that's a part of the protocol of the police department's communication system. So for me, I'm not surprised that there was very vague information. Also, the light rail is under the jurisdiction and authority of the Metro Transit Police, if you will. And so you have cross communication, Don. You're a former military man, as you know we are, and so there's cross communication and et cetera. But I'm not surprised, because there has been a violent response from many of the younger Somalis about what happened in the Mohamed Noor trial and some of the actions that have been taken against them over the last 3 or 4 years, sentenced to federal prison for so-called terroristic acts and et cetera. So it's just important, particularly for our worldwide audience, that they understand just what is happening here. I'm not surprised at the kind of weapons being used and et cetera. It is consistent with some other situations that have taken place that the system chooses to ignore, if you will. And so, but you have to appreciate that. So, but go ahead, Don, if we got any more callers, because.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We have another caller. It looks like our caller from the Midwest is live.
Hello.
Caller,
good morning. Yeah, good morning.
Good morning,
both of you.
All right.
Morning. Yeah,
sounds like Christine. Yeah. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What do you have?
Oh, I just wanted to make kind of one comment to begin with, and that's that the Somali community, I think maybe they've realized that they've kind of stepped into American justice now. The reason I said that, there was a study that was done a few years ago by a professor in North Carolina, and it talked specifically about the death penalty, but they said that the single most reliable predictor of whether a defendant would receive the death penalty in the United States was the race of the victim. And so if the victim was white, you stood a far greater chance of getting the death penalty than if the defendant were black, and specifically if it was a white female, you stood several times. And actually, in one state, I think in Louisiana, you stood like about a 12 times more likely. You were 12 times more likely to get the death penalty.
Wow!
In a murder case,
I don't know if you misspoke or not, Steve. You mean you're more likely to get the death penalty if you're an African American who has killed a Caucasian and specifically a female.
Right.
Okay, you kind of misspoke on that.
Well, pretty much you were more likely to get the death penalty if the victim is white and specifically a white female. But yeah, if you're black, it's even a greater percentage that you're going to get the death penalty. But
but
you know, it's the kind of thing, it's almost straight out, what was that movie years ago, Birth of a Nation, sort of the protection of the white woman kind of thing, where the Ku Klux Klan kind of comes to the rescue.
W.D. Griffin, Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
They had white folks running around with blackface on, raping white women.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
way back, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Somali community's kind of stepped right into the middle of it now. So hopefully they maybe have a better understanding of what's going on in this country now. But the question I kind of hate to harp on this, but is the NAACP made any statements about the new abortion bills in Missouri or Alabama? I know that I think nationally they're pro-abortion or something, or pro-choice, but locally, are they doing anything?
That's a tough one. I'm kind of cautious, and I want to be respectful to my colleague because he comes from a very active religious family, the Babel family, very much involved. In fact, he has a late uncle who was the first person to cut my hair on my little head when I came here in 1945. We, NAACP doesn't take a position on much of anything other than, you know, go to meetings and spend time over at the state capitol, you know, with the governor and et cetera. And we certainly, now, Mr. Allen, you know, was, you know, the father of young children. Maybe he speaks to it. We sure don't talk about abortion in the African-American community. In fact, we don't even speak about the disproportionate number of black infant mortalities that take place here in Minnesota, and particularly in the Twin Cities. So we allegedly have some of the best hospitals in America right here. And, of course, we have the great Mayo Clinic in Rochester, which is about 90 miles south of us in the city of Rochester, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, your question about the NAACP speaking on anything, they really don't have the time, and I have seen nothing. Early this morning, I was checking the informational fold, if you will. I haven't seen it. Have you seen anything, Brother Allen, from the NAACP?
I remember back in 2004, Julian Bond, then the chairman of the NAACP, said that they're pleased that they support a woman's right to control her body. And I just pulled it up, too, on the computer to confirm that. He did say that. And I think that's been their ongoing practice to support abortion in the black community. To go against the defunding of Planned Parenthood that was in the mix for a long time. I'm not sure if that even happened. And Ms. Banger's point of view of the black person as a weed that needed to be killed. With that group, Planned Parenthood. So looks like the NAACP does support abortion. Me personally, you know, I'm a dude. I'm not trying to legislate a woman's body at all whatsoever. And there are cases where abortion might be necessary. And I know our family growing up here, as you said, Mr. Edwards, they didn't support that. The religious folks in the church, they didn't support that. They didn't talk about it. If it happened, they didn't talk about it. But neither did they talk about homosexuality in the church or the sexual abuse to boys and girls in the church.
Like the Catholic Church didn't say anything. Okay.
Yeah, those were quiet in the black church. That was kept very quiet, very low-key. And it wasn't until I was a adult, after I got out of the service, that I realized why girls would not come back to our church. Why the organist set the tenor boys in front of the choir when the tenors should be going, you know, soprano, alto, tenors are usually in the back of the choir. But he had all the boys in front. And I didn't understand that and what was going on. You know, until I started to hear stuff, I was like, wow, okay, and it came to me. But, yeah, to wrap it up, we don't talk about a lot of things in a lot of different areas, and this silence here on these critical issues, it's like Somali women that have lived in the United States for at least a minimum of 10 years have the same infant mortality rates as black women who have been there all their life. And so
yes,
they just fall right into the slot.
Infant mortality is awesome, unfortunately, to our caller from the Midwest. Mr. Allen is absolutely correct. But let me ask you this question, kind of reverse it a little bit. You know, you ask some tough questions of us.
Uh-huh.
But in your Missouri legislature 2 days ago, one of the good white Republican representatives, I don't know if he was in the House or the Senate, But he made the statement, and of course, you know, you could tell it upset a lot of commentators, female, white female commentators on the subject. He said that in the issue of saving, quote unquote, the mother, etc. He said that rape and essentially was the cause of consensual. I've never heard that before from a person who was well in their mind, that it's all about women consensually agreeing to be raped. Could you explain to us a little bit what the heck happened down there in Jeff City?
Yeah, his name is Barry Hovis, and he's a representative, Missouri House representative. And actually, he was a, just to give him a little bit of background, he was a 30-year veteran of the Cape Girardeau Police Department. And same
wow.
area that Rush Limbaugh comes from, that same area.
Yeah, I know it well.
Yeah, very conservative area. I think what he was saying, it sounds really bad. What he was trying to, I think, what he said was that basically if a woman went out on a date with a guy, that if she had sex with him, it really couldn't be considered rape. I guess that's what he was trying to say. That basically rape was basically somebody jumping out of the bushes and grabbing some woman or something like that. But if you were on a date, you couldn't really be raped because it was consensual.
Did he share those observations with his wife? I assume he was married, right? Good
yeah.
old boy. Normally they
yeah.
say that came to the real.
Yeah.
I wanted to say
yeah.
that to his wife. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
So it is confirmed, and thank you for giving us the name
yeah.
because
yeah.
I noticed
yeah.
yesterday that the white national media stayed away from identifying him. They kept identifying
yeah.
his statement that
yeah.
that if there's an issue of rape or et cetera, it's consensual.
Yeah.
All of it is consensual, and consequently
yeah.
there's no justification.
So
he was from good old Cape down there in Cape Girardeau.
Cape Girardeau, Missouri.
Missouri. I see. Good old boy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
let me ask you this question, too, and then we'll let you go.
Okay.
We had asked you in a call in, you and some of your people, your team, what is the status, and maybe we'll have to explain it a little bit again, Mr. Allen, so you understand, but what is the circumstances involving the black St. Louis City police officer, Lester Hall, who had become a hero in the St. Louis black community, but it the national media doesn't care. He was an undercover officer working a demonstration, actually a demonstration about what happened in a town just outside of St. Louis. But he was set upon and beaten almost to death by three white police officers, and then there was a fourth white female officer who at the administrative end altered documents and et cetera. The state's attorney in St. Louis County, also that's the county that the city of St. Louis is in, refused to charge the officers. And then to the surprise of everybody, the FBI came in, conducted an investigation, and took it to a federal grand jury, and they indicted these guys. But how is Lester Hall doing? Steve, can you, at least memorialize him?
Oh, yeah. He's still actually waiting for a trial date right now. And the only statement he's made so far that I found this year was that he said he was beaten like they beat Rodney King. That was his only statement. So he's still
wow.
just waiting for a trial date to come up here. And it would be a federal, basically, civil rights trial. He still hasn't gone back to work. He's right now not capable of working because he was beaten that badly. So
yes, and again, his name is Lester Hall.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, he was a sergeant in the St. Louis City Police Department. It was working undercover and surveillance and etc. when he was attacked by Phil Austin. It reminded me of a case here, and we'll close it out. An Asian officer, one of the few Asian officers that we had in this department, who was shot by his own colleagues. In fact, one of them had a locker, two lockers away from a Dewey No. I know that's a name that everybody tries to pretend to forget. His testicles and other private parts were shot off his body. And the reason I bring it up, because I'm looking at the $20 million settlement that the family got, some of which they were already, turned over to neo-Nazis and etc. But Dewey No received $4.3 million. That was the largest settlement until last a week and a half ago, $20 million to the Australians. But Dewey No, who is still memorialized, committed suicide. He was a young man, young wife, young child. He stayed the course. God bless him. He stayed the course. He was awarded the money, $4.3 million. And then a couple months later, he took his life. And the reason I say that, because you really worry about Sergeant Lester Hall, African-American of the St. Louis City Police Department, just how he's holding up. Because, boy, he ain't getting no national coverage. I don't hear the Urban League or NAACP or nobody else saying anything about it. But, but appreciate you taking the time.
Sure,
any other quick questions for us?
No, that's all. That's all.
All right.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards, it looks like we have another caller.
Let's go and get it, John. That's what it's all about, man. Phone lines are open. Go ahead.
Caller, you have a question or you want to be in a queue?
46. I have a question. Yes, I'd like to make a comment about the light rail incident. I experienced just this past week an incident on light rail where there's two police, Metro Transit Police, that strategically sits at the Capitol up there on University, and the light rail comes into St. Paul, out back to Minneapolis. Now, I saw just this week three Hmong security officers with the Metro Transit jump on the light rail and go to every African American that was on the train, and even some of the poor whites, they didn't even ask where were they transfers. So it doesn't surprise me how light rail, just this quick, has had an incident. Now, the reason why light rail is having a lot of incidents, let me bring something to you two gentlemen's attention. Are you two gentlemen familiar with the gentleman by the name of Wes Oostra?
Now, who has what? Give us the background.
Wes Oostra is the regional administrator for Metropolitan Transit, who is now traded places with Mr. Harrington, who used to be the top cop at the Metro Transit. Wes Oostra has no background in security whatsoever. It's almost like, see, this is the kind of shit that goes on in Minnesota. You get up there, it takes him 2 years to respond to a serious situation when he was at the administration position at Metro Transit. And Harrington, who played a pivotal role in an incident, they traded places, and it's almost like this is a plantation, this is some kind of game that the black people play up here and the white people play, and it's like a serious plantation, and the real orchestrators behind everything are the Jews.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, just let us kind of correct you. They did not trade places. John Harrington was promoted to a very powerful position. He is now the commissioner of public safety for the state of Minnesota. And so he is a member of the governor's cabinet. So he's gone from the transit. Yeah.
Well, let me make that a little clear for you.
John Harrington is the top guy now. He in the DCA, all the state highway patrol, all of those report to him. In fact, they report through a young African American who was an under sheriff for the Ramsey County Department, Dakota County Sheriff, for that police chief out in Prior Lake there for about 2 months, named Booker Hodges, former president of the NAACP of Minneapolis. But John is now the man in public safety reporting directly to the governor.
Well, I'd like to put it to you this way.
I'm not surprised. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to put it to you this way for our listening audience. If you're a black person and you're sitting at the helm at HRH Metro and black people have serious issues and you won't get back with them, the gentleman that switched place with you won't get back with them. So it's like a little, like Mr. Allen said, it's a little cabal game that y'all play. You keep their dirty white secrets to yourself and you can move up off the plantation. Does that sound a little better?
I can believe it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the point I'm trying to make. And with that one, I'm done. You're going to have a nice week.
Right. Thank you, sir.
Take care. All right. Yeah, well, that caller was preaching to the choir, Miss Allen, because, you know, I've lived here since 1945. So, I learned as a little toddler, and you've learned also, though you're a whole generation behind me. But, hey, you know, it's what it is. But all we can do is bring the news and expect the leadership, you know. Don, when is the last time we've seen a meeting by the leadership to receive questions from the masses, the base that they're supposed to operate? Can you remember a meeting in the last 10 years?
You know, no, not really. I mean, I'm trying to think. And I don't remember any meeting of the black leadership where it was a Q&A. I remember the ones they used to have, like 2008, where you couldn't stand up and say a question. You had to write it down on a piece of paper. And that was to eliminate 40% of the people in the audience that couldn't write a sentence.
Yeah.
That might have rather voiced a sentence. Yeah. They used to do that, pull that crank all the time. And that's just when I stopped going because I wrote questions. They never read them.
Wow.
So they would screen and censor. They would screen and censor. I remember the one at the U-Rock in North Minneapolis with Senator Champion, Senator Hayden. I think there were state reps at the time. And a couple other folks there that didn't really want to answer any hard questions. And so Mr. Al McFarland from Insight News was the moderator, and they asked that the questions be written down, and I would like to congratulate Al Flowers, Mr. Al Flowers from the Urban Conversations, I think it's called, Community Standards, on the KMLJ, who stood up and started asking questions. He says he ain't writing nothing now. And that turned into
that sounds like
to
Al
a knockdown.
Al
just stood up and said, hey, no, I'm not writing nothing down. I got to tell you guys some questions. And that kind of broke it wide open. I appreciate him for that. But Mr. Edwards, did I answer to your question at 1027? No, I don't remember the last time there was a community meeting in the black community where there was a Q&A session from the masses, which is long overdue. By the way,
the same Al Flowers is the same gentleman a couple weeks ago. We talked about him here on our program, who broke open wide open a meeting in which a majority of white folks showed up at the Urban League talking allegedly of crime fighting and et cetera, and were trying to control the flow of the conversation. Al Flowers got up, and this woman by the name of Joey Marsh Stevenson, who runs a program, a Recast, which we've talked about on this program. By the way, she never got back to talk in terms of the white man that was actually running the meeting. She was out of town partying somewhere. And I had called him, and she stepped in to block the call, indicated to some friends that she wasn't going to have people like us who are toxic but in any way disrespecting this white man. That was Joy Marsh Stevenson. And we never got the information that we asked for with regards to the violence. Maybe that's the reason that shooters are feeling comfortable with shooting so many black women. And we repeat again, 7 black women shot at once in Minneapolis in the last 10 days. But, hey, God, nothing we can do about it. If the leaders and the bosses ain't concerned, I mean, what can we be expected to do? You know what I'm saying?
I agree. And just under 50 seconds, Mr. Edwards, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Ron and Don Show. We'll be back next Saturday. Final words, Mr. Edwards.
No, just let James Brown take us home. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Take care.
Thank you.